Falconry guidebook. For those that haven't been to RAC meetings recently or ever, I just want to kind of explain a little bit about how these meetings are going to be run. First of all, the division will present a recommendation that they feel comfortable with as far as how and when and why we're going to be harvesting bears and using falcons. Then once that presentation is presented, the RAC will have an opportunity to ask questions. These questions are going to be for clarification so that the RAC can understand better what the division is presenting, as well as clarification on management, where the division wants to go with management. After the RAC has an opportunity for questions, I'm going to open it up to the public here for questions and questions only. And the purpose for the questions is the same as for the RAC. It's to clarify in your mind what the division is presenting and why they're presenting it in the way they are. Now, after the question period, anybody who wants to make a comment or suggests an alternative to what the division's recommendation is, I ask that you fill out one of these yellow cards and bring it up to me. And at that point, I'll go through the cards first as I receive them. And you guys will all have an opportunity to address the RAC with your recommendations and comments. At that point, once we've gone through all the cards, we're going to close it to public input, and we'll go back to the RAC. And the RAC will discuss not only the division recommendation, but the comments provided by the public here tonight, and hopefully come up with a motion, hopefully pass a motion, to take a recommendation back to the Wildlife Board. We've got two action items tonight, the bear recommendations and the Falconry Guidebook. So with that, we need the agenda for tonight and the minutes from the last RAC meeting. Anybody have any concerns or comments on the minutes from last month? Can I entertain a motion then?
I'll move that we accept the minutes as is.
Blair Eastman made the motion to approve the minutes as written, seconded by Kevin Albrecht. All those in favor? Any opposed? Can I entertain a motion for the agenda as well?
I move that we accept the agenda.
Again, Blair made the motion to accept the agenda, seconded by Kevin. All those in favor? Opposed? Unanimous. Usually we have our Wildlife Board member present an update on the Wildlife Board, what occurred at the last meeting. The Wildlife Board met this November 30th and December 1st. On November 30th, they had a work session where they don't decide anything. Or supposedly not decide anything. It's a public meeting, but there's no hard and fast decisions made at the work sessions. But they did discuss a proposal to request that the division take back to the RACs, I think at the May meeting. They want two alternative proposals on the buck-doe ratios for the mule deer management plan. And these, what their hope is that maybe something a little more flexible than the rigid 18 to 25 bucks per 100 does can be adopted. Now this is a proposal that will come back to the RACs for review, and if whatever the RACs approve or recommend to the board, before the board can accept them, there's a possibility they'll have to modify the deer management plan before the change can actually occur. On the 1st of December meeting, the director gave a little update and mentioned that there's going to be a fawn mortality study on the Monroe Deer Unit. Now, we've had, there's several units in the state that have the adult survivability study ongoing, and this is going to be a more intense look at fawn mortality and what's causing that mortality. It's going to be tied specifically to the Monroe, and it sounds like it's going to be a multi-university study, so it should have some pretty good stuff come out of it. Hopefully it can be extrapolated around the rest of the state. They reported on a legislative audit that the division just went through. The legislative audit supported the conservation permit program, and they recommended, a recommendation to the division through the audit was to, on the CWMU program, was to look at the ratio of public and private permits. So that's probably something we're going to see potentially coming up to the RACs in the future is a new look at that public-private ratio. So kind of keep that in mind. The audit had multiple recommendations for the hatchery system, many of which are being implemented almost immediately. Walk-in access program lost $1 million in funding for this coming fiscal year, so it's unclear now what, if we're going to be cutting back on the number of acres that will be in the access program or what, but there is going to be a tightening of the belt, especially in that program. With the loss of funding on the walk-in access and the loss of some federal dollars through PR and Pittman and Dingle Johnson money, the division announced that they're going to be likely seeking the license fee increase or the support for a license fee increase for 2013. So that's another thing that'll be coming to the RACs probably in the next year. On the action item, the Bucks Bulls Once in a Lifetime season, the guidebook basically, there was a lot of discussion on our 9 mile range trick, whether it should go any bull or limited entry. There's a lot of discussion on the request by archers to allow archers to hunt statewide instead of unit by unit. And then there's a lot of discussion on the program that the Northern Regions had on a bucks and bulls combination hunt. Brad King, the board member from Southeast Utah, requested that on the 9 mile any bull recommendation that somehow some data be collected so that it can be compared to the system we've had with limited entry so that in the future maybe we can compare the two and see which is working better for meeting the management objectives on that herd unit. The director suggested that law enforcement write an action plan to address the trespass concern with the increased number of hunters that will be on a unit with a lot of private land. And he also suggested that Brad's concerns as far as collecting data be an action log item for the Wildlife Board. With those discussions, the board passed the division recommendation as presented. The division recommendation had changed slightly since our RAC had met. The division recommendation included a change in the Northeast region late archery boundary, and they also included the Willard Peak goat season change into the division recommendation. So it included those two changes from when our RAC met on it. CWMU permit numbers passed, unanimous. Alton CWMU requested 1 and 5 on a management hunt. The division's recommendation was a 1 and 3. The board split the difference and gave Alton a 1 and 4. Landowner permit numbers passed 5-1 with a variance for the Diamond Mountain Landowner Association. And conservation permit audit, it's an internal audit that the division does on conservation organizations that receive conservation permits. And all organizations were in compliance. SCI, Safari Club International, and Sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife actually returned more dollars than they were required to under the rule. And with that, we'll go to the regional overview.
Okay. Did you mention that on the action log they directed us to collect data on 9 Mile range creek this next year?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just almost thinking I ought to sit down here, but I've got to advance the computer, so I don't mean to stand in front of you guys over here, but try to get through this quickly. We kind of get to the time of year that we're starting to get into report writing and taking care of some wildlife viewing opportunities like that. Other than wildlife section's got a lot going on with surveys right now, and also gearing up for some capture opportunities. There's going to be a burbot bash if anybody's interested up at Flaming Gorge. It's going to be the end of January if you want to go up there and help catch a lot of burbot. I hear they're really good eating, and we'd like to get as many burbot out of the system as we could up there. It's an introduced species that we'd like to try to reduce numbers on. Ice is more than starting to form on mountain waters. We know that Schofield has had people fishing on it today. The ice is about 4.5 inches thick, so they've started to get out there now. And I think the other things you're pretty much aware of. Brent's been busy. He's working on a YouTube video on deer and sheep. He had the mule deer viewing day up there by Nash Wash and got a lot of good video. So that'll be available for you to look at. And I don't know if any of you have ever gone online and gone to YouTube and looked for the Utah Division of Wildlife videos. Most of them are pretty good, but there's one or two that I just assume you didn't look at. But Brent also had his bighorn sheep viewing opportunity up at Green River this last weekend on the 3rd. And they had about 50 people show up and saw quite a few different sheep. You didn't have any rams butting heads, though, did you, Brent?
Yeah,
we did.
We had a couple.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. Okay. And the mule deer watch, I think we talked about it last time, didn't turn out quite as well. We only had 2 people show up at that, but it was still a good opportunity for them. Then they didn't want to ride in our vehicles. And we bought, 3 of those?
Yeah, we had 3 riding.
We'll try to plan better next time. Law enforcement has been really busy with lots of investigations. There's been right down here in San Juan County, they found a couple of bucks that have been shot and killed, and I think you might have a couple of leads on those.
No leads, but there is information back here if anybody wants to read it. The other one, that bomb in Eastland, that case was made last week.
Okay, good. And we've been doing some winter range patrols. That's where you came up and found these deer, was in the winter range patrol, wasn't it?
Yeah, somebody called them in.
They found, I think we found some, didn't we find one over on the Henrys too? Buck over there?
Since November 1st, we've had 14 illegal kills in our half of the region down here. And we've made cases on about half of those, but the Henry Mountains, we had just
it's It's been a busy fall for law enforcement. They've done really well. The habitat section been finishing up a few of their projects. I think we only didn't meet that long ago, and I think we talked about most of all of these last time. The Hat Ranch, they've got the excavator there that actually pulls the tamarisk plants out by the roots. Sue, do you have any indication? Is that more effective than the cutting and spraying, or?
I don't know. Sorry.
Okay. we'll still monitor that to see. Most places with the tamarisk, they just cut it off and spray it. If you spray it when it's a fresh cut, that supposedly kills the roots. Otherwise, it'll re-sprout. But if you go, what we're doing here is they're just taking in like this track hole with some pinchers on it, and they pull the plants out by the roots, and we burn them. We'll see. But if you've gone over there, you know, driven down Highway 24, the Hat Ranch looks just beautiful compared to how it used to with all the tamarisk. And we're actually working over on Frenchman's and heading down towards the Chaffin Ranch now too. Wildlife section has been busy doing bighorn sheep surveys. You could talk to Justin afterwards and Wade, but the count was down on the North San Rafael. We'll probably come in and be talking about permit reductions on the North San Rafael, but I think they counted about 86 sheep, and where, you know, it hasn't been that many years ago, like 2001, I think we counted about 276, so it's down quite a bit. But the South San Rafael, on the other hand, was about the same, maybe a little bit higher than the last survey, a little bit down over 4 years ago, but it was looking better there. We're going to do a capture with bighorn sheep in January, isn't that right? Or January, Brad?
Next week.
Oh, it's next week. Okay. I guess in January is when we're catching them on the San Rafael. Okay, and we're gonna catch those and just move them up towards Jack Creek. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. And we'll be doing some radio collaring, replacing some of the radio collars on bison, and also we have the deer study, the capture for that going on. And in January we'll be catching sheep on the North San Rafael to start a study there to see what we try to figure out what's going on there. And we've also implemented our statewide survey of winter condition and severity. And if anybody's interested in receiving those, or do you guys get them? You if you're interested in seeing that, we could send it to you every week. What they do is they monitor, you know, snow depth, temperature, and also on roadkill deer, we measure the fat on the brisket to have some kind of indication. And that plays into the whole policy on winter feeding for deer and stuff like that. So, okay, I'll open up for questions. But for those in the audience, the reason we're holding our meeting here tonight is because a little over a year ago we held our open house down in Blanding, and that was a suggestion, and that we bring the meeting on Bears down here. And last year we almost did, but logistics didn't work out, so that's why we're here this year. Hopefully, let's give everybody a chance to voice their concerns. And I guess, Darris, if you want it to end the meeting, we could actually talk about if you want to take the meeting to other places in the region and see what the RAC members think, if you'd like to do that. So, okay, are there any questions? Okay, thanks.
Okay, John, we're ready for you.
Yes. Thank you.
If you keep it short, it's a good job.
Yeah. Matter you scared everybody.
Oh.
I guess it worked. Great, thank you. Good evening, everybody. Good to see a good crowd of people out here tonight. What I'm going to do is go over quite a bit of information. We've got a brand new bear management plan this year, and we've got 3-year recommendations coming in. So I'll spend a little bit of time going over the plan, how things get put together, how these recs were put together, and then we'll go over into some details on some of the different units and give examples. I had handouts in the back, so you can see more specifics, details on those, or on the RAC has in your RAC packet, you'll have the information in more detail. So you can refer to that. So again, this is our current new plan. The gist of it, the basic feel of the plan, is that it tries to balance our need to reduce human bear conflict, to maximize recreational opportunities so people can take advantage of this resource, but also at the same time to protect bear populations to make sure that we're going to have these things through the future. Now, there's some tricks to applying the plan in terms of what it's based on biologically and the type of metrics that we're using in order to come up with our management recommendations. And the first thing to remember is that females and males have differential susceptibility to harvest, especially early in the spring. And what this means is, and we've seen this out of studies out of Idaho, is that if you have a heavily hunted bear population, what is called a liberal harvest, you'll see a high proportion of females in that harvest. Whereas if you have a light harvest, you'll see relatively more adult males in the harvest as these males are moving around, essentially surplus animals moving around, and they're more susceptible. So those ratios are what we use to assess our populations and to assess our harvest levels. So the plan is pretty specific. We've got some real sideboards about how we do everything. It sets how we design the different strategies and then how we adjust permits. So and it's a stepwise process. The first is for each region to select the harvest strategy at the unit level. And there's a rule within the plan that we have to divide the hunts up in a certain way. So we want to manage our different units in light, moderate, or liberal categories, as I described before. And the plan dictates that we need to have 25% or so of the units in light. Moderate has to be over 50%, and liberal under 25%. So it puts us in around 75% of our units in light or moderate categories. And how do we choose which management strategy we're going to use? It's dependent on the management issues within each particular unit. So we might choose a light unit if we have low human bear conflict or low bear population, or if we have a population that we want to act as a source population for other units. Moderate will have a moderate amount of human bear conflict and a stable bear population. And again, a liberal unit, one that we want to manage more liberally, is one where we'll tend to have high amounts of human bear conflict or increasing bear populations. Okay. So after we've selected our harvest strategy, we make our permit recommendations based on the harvest results, a three-year average of what we've seen in the previous 3 years, in relation to the performance targets in the harvest strategy. And this is where it gets a little more interesting. So we can see our light, our moderate, and our liberal strategies. And within each one of those strategies, we're looking for targets of adult males, so males greater than 5 years old, and then a target percentage for adult for females within those different units. So we look at our previous 3 years, and we'll go back and say, for instance, we might have a unit where we want to be in a moderate category, and we might have, we pick up 25% are females in the harvest and 30% are males in the harvest. So the plan says that if we've got the females are out because they're in the light, according to that percentage, and the males were right in. So the plan says, you have one in the category and one out, so you can adjust your permits by 0 to 20%. And then the biologist will make the decision, and in this case would adjust, add some permits in to adjust the ratios by somewhere between 0 and 20%. And then we can choose different permit adjustments based on where we fall out in those categories. Again, if both out in the same direction, then you can adjust the permits even more. So we've got constraints. Now, the other part of the plan, too, this is interesting. These two things are kicking in. This third step has to do with a population density study based on the growth rate of the bears in the different regions. We've got five different sample areas in each of the regions where we're collecting bear hair, doing DNA analysis, identifying individuals, and actually getting a population estimate and, more importantly, a population growth rate for that area. So when we have those growth weights, we can use that information to adjust our permits as well. So as I said, these hair snares use genetic analyses. They estimate the growth rates in the different regions. And one of the things about the genetics is that there's a bunch of variants in it. It's not the most precise tool in the world at this point. So if we're within a plus or minus 10% in terms of the population's growth rate, we won't adjust the permits. However, if they start falling outside of the ranges, more than 5%, you know, say if it's 15% above, we might adjust the permits down by up to zero, between 10 and 20%, and the same going even more outside the range. So if that makes sense. That's a statewide effect. And then the last step in the process is to make potential permit adjustments based on a bear recruitment study, so seeing how many new individuals are coming into the population. A little bit more in terms of bear biology here. This supplemental den observations, this is also a work in progress. We're still starting this up. This is a new plan, so we're still gathering our data for we need to do this for 5 years. And we're looking for what is called a recruitment pulse in the population of bears. As people may know that bears will have good seasons and then bad seasons, and you might have a good season where there's really good reproduction and a few seasons without really good reproduction. So if we see one of these reproductive pulses, if we don't see one in 5 years, we'll say, okay, the reproduction's down, we'll adjust the permits down statewide by 10 to 20%. If we see two pulses in 5 years, we might adjust up 20 to 30%. So that's how that information is used. And this is the bear collaring study where we go in and do the dens. Right now there are about 20, 25 bears with collars on. So additional techniques, again, the plan out gives us some other tools that we are able to use or should use in certain situations. One is the extended spring season. This is used when we're working in areas with nuisance complaints where we can extend the spring season and work on resolving conflicts that way by reducing those local bears wandering around. Another one is the harvest objective approach. And this one's kind of interesting as well. The plan sets us up for this first round to use three different harvest objectives, where it's a good plan, it's an interesting one, but also pushes the envelope in a variety of ways and has us explore some different management techniques, this being one of them. There are three quotas that we need to test. The one is a standard where we have a set number of animals. The other is a split quota where it's combined with a harvest objective, it's combined with a limited entry, or it's related to what's taken in limited entry. And then a female subquota where we might cap a certain number of females, where we'll stop the harvest once a certain number of females are harvested. Spot and stalk hunts is another tool that's been put into the plan for us to use. And the idea with these are to provide additional opportunity in areas, largely in around the big game seasons. So there are any weapon type hunts, no hounds, and no bait. They're the types of things that we see, at least in other states, tend to be, they add opportunity, but the success rate is usually pretty low in this kind of thing. So, there's the guidelines. So how do we put the plan in place? What are the recommendations for this year? We went through the first step, selected the strategies, and statewide, it fell out right according to plan. We have 13% of our units that fell into light categories. We have 65% that fell into the moderate, and 22% that fell into the liberal. So as you can see, we still have about 75% or so in that light to moderate strategy statewide. Using our three-year harvest summary, this is just limited entry permits that I've tallied right here, but over the last few years, 2011, 442, and then in our harvest ratios, our percent adult males puts us at 41, and if we went back to those tables, we'd see that fell into a moderate category. And then if the percent females at 29 puts the females in light, and if we go back to our tables, if we went back to tables, we'd see that 29% puts them in the light category. So that indicates that statewide, over the last few years, we've actually been harvesting overall in a light to moderate approach to our harvest management. And that's why we're seeing. Population growth rates, only two of the sites we have good enough data to make decent estimates on, and both of these fell within that less than 10% increase or decrease, so that didn't require us to make any regional adjustments. And for the denning, again, I had hinted that this is a five-year block that we need to use, so we have insufficient data for now. We're still continuing with the study, of course, but we haven't made any permit adjustments based on this statewide thing either. So overall, according to the plan, following all these steps, following all these procedures, following all the guidelines, we calculated our permit ratios using our permits using those ratios, and the recommendations came up with, in terms of limited entry permits for 2012, 494, which puts us at about 11% up above what we had in 2011. 12 of the units end up with an extended spring season. We've got our three quota units as dictated by the plan, and then two new limited entry spot and stock units as well. Something else of interest is that all units are going to remain open for the summer training season, and something else of interest, I think, to everybody here is some of the things that we saw in La Salle and San Juan units that are causing us to make some additional recommendations. Again, your details are in your packets, but this is just a typical unit. The spring dates, April, May, fall dates, that season in August, September, then again in November, number of permits divided up. In the packets, I have state or in-state and out-of-state combined, just so we can see the total numbers. But then the spring suits, summer pursuits, everything is pretty similar as we've seen before. The extended spring seasons, the way they broke that down in a little more detail, in the northern region, we had two, northeast, four, central region, three units, and southern, two units. So it broke up fairly evenly across the state where we need to use these extended spring seasons. The harvest objective units are regular in the Wasatch Current of Inoquin. And it's at those dates, April 7th, June 3rd. We put the female subquota on the beaver in the fall, and then we use our split season that we needed to do according to the plan into the 9 mile according to those dates. There are some issues with conservation permits, for instance, in the Bitter Creek, that we'll need to move some around. But we'll wait board approval on that to make that a little cleaner with conservation permits.
John, that last slide. So on the 9 mile, all you're talking about is you have your regular spring hunt with, you know, you use hounds and baiting, and then in the 9 mile in the fall, what happens from, you know, the end of August up to October 6th?
So it's going to have the regular fall limited entry from August 25th to September 30th, and then August 6th is when it starts again as a harvest objective.
Okay.
Thank you. And I did struggle with summarizing and make this into a reasonable presentation, so more of your details again in the packet. The spot and stock units on LaSalle and San Juan, spring limited entry, April, the fall limited entry moved a little bit. We bumped it a little earlier there and shortened the season due to some complaints that we've had in the past to try to share the mountains as best as we can, essentially. And then we had that additional spot and stock in October and added 30 permits in for that.
Okay.
Now, one of the unique things about putting these recommendations together this particular season were some of the trends that we saw on La Salle and San Juan units that made us think we need to really pay attention to what's going on and investigate things. Essentially, La Salle and San Juan, before summer pursuits, when we looked at some of these earlier years, and we measured the amount of bear incidents, bears getting into town, and causing problems. You can see in that bad forage year, it's expected to get six, and we averaged about two per year. Whereas after those summer pursuits were put in place, the bear incidence on those same units really jumped up to an average of about 10 per year. So that got us scratching our heads and thinking it's correlative. We don't have any proof. We're not really sure what's going on, but we better pay attention to it and look into it. And that's what we're proposing to do. Essentially, what happens when we look at the data in another way, if on both places, when we have the number of permits increases, the number of bears that show up in town increase. The same thing on the San Juan. As you increase permits, you increase the number of incidents of bears in town. So again, what we did is we were proposed to make a 60% reduction of the summer pursuits on one unit and then no reduction on the other, and then alternate those two units back and forth so we can tease out any effects of any other effects of year or season or whatever. And really the question what we're asking ourselves is, does reducing the permits reduce the number of nuisance bears? Does the number of people up there chasing and moving bears around cause bears to move down because of that number of pursuits? And this is one way to look at it, to get a feel for that, what's the right number. So to do it in terms of, to break it up number-wise, as I said, LaSalle, what we're doing the first year is LaSalle's is going to bump down to about 60% less than what it was last year, but the San Juan will stay up exactly where it is. Then we flip those for 2013, and then LaSalle's now high, and the San Juan's are down, reduced. And again, we're going to guess that, well, we're going to see if the LaSalle's then result in less this year, and then there's less incidences in these areas in that year. And then the final year, we do the same flip, but within the early and late season. So LaSalle will be high at first and low late, and San Juan low at first, and San Juan high in the later season, and look to see if we see correlations in bear in town. Then what we do is, this is, works out well because it's a three-year cycle. We are look at where we are in 2014, and that will really help us to make some good recommendations, so we'll have some good data that we can incorporate into our next cycle. So to summarize the overall in general, again, refer to your packets for details, but our spring hunts, pursuits, we can have our April 7th and May 29th for our regular ones, and then we can extend them to June 3rd when there's nuisance issues. The fall limited entry, August 25th to September 30th, but again with that adjustment on San Juan and LaSalle to bump that a little bit earlier, and then November 1, November 20th, like everywhere else. Adding those spot and stalk hunts, that'll go October 6th to the 29th. And then keeping the summer pursuit more or less as it is everywhere, but then doing those things with San Juan and LaSalle. That's the summary of our recommendations. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Does the RAC have any questions for John? I've got one, John. On the two units that you're doing the genetic sampling on to determine population shifts on the hair samples, you're taking that and extrapolating those two units statewide and saying, If both of them are increasing, you're saying bear populations are increasing throughout the state, or are you just using it for those particular units?
Yes, sir. They're just being, we have five different sites within each region throughout the state, and then we gather the information within that region and extrapolate through the region.
Through the region.
So those two are the ones that we had good estimates on, and if we had found something on those, we would have done it only within those two regions, not throughout the whole state.
Okay. So you reported the Camas and the LaSalle's, I think, on your slide. You have, but you do have one of those in every region?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, we do. Okay.
All right, thanks.
What was the reason behind shortening the fall hunts in the LaSalle and the San Juan?
The idea was due to, did you want to address that? Largely, we're trying our best. One of the things about this plan is it really tries to balance different competing interests and different desires, and sometimes contrasting objectives. And one of the issues in those units, especially those are prime units, are different than other places in the state. And we tried to make it so we've divided it up so we can have a little more time. Basically, what that does is gives the archers, bow hunters, 1 week where they've got a loan where they don't have hounds coming through and other people coming through. So that's the gist of it. Unless there's something you want to add, Justin.
Why not do it to the rest of the state then? Why is it just LaSalle and San Juan?
Again, it's one of those unique. I think the real pressure there in terms of we get more complaints there than we have in other places, and that's really led to us taking a little extra effort there. But Justin?
Travis, I can speak to that for the region. I mean, on the Manti and the 9 Mile, I haven't heard the same complaints from elk hunters with archery hunters that I have in those other areas. So we figured it would be a little bit more surgical instead of throw a blanket over the entire state. So, I mean, some units have more conflict than others.
Well, on this, LaSalle, San Juan, high bear populations, probably the most sought-out bear tags. You're reducing the amount of time they have to harvest, probably the best time to harvest a bear.
Sure.
They're going to shoot a bear with a summer coat rather than a fall coat, and it's not going to be...
No, and those are fair arguments. The other argument is, I mean, the San Juans also are... most trophy elk unit in the state, and they've heard complaints from them as well. And so we're just trying to.
Couldn't you keep it the same hunt? Maybe stop hounds at that time, but they can still hunt for the.
Sure, that's an option. Yeah, I mean the hounds were the conflict. That's what we kept hearing complaints about. Was a stray hound would follow an elk hunter around all day on the LaSalle's, and then we'd hear about it, and. So we were just trying to minimize the conflict. So, but definitely, if that's something the RAC wanted to recommend, sure.
Any other questions from the RAC? Okay, open it up for questions from the public. I request that you do use this time for questions. I promise I'll give you all the opportunity in the world for comments as soon as we're done with the questions. Please state your name before you ask the question.
Scott Watson. I have some questions on if you guys have any idea how many bears we have down here. I mean, is there an estimate on the San Juan and the LaSalle's? Because that might play a lot in the correlation with the amount of complaints you're getting with them coming in town. I've seen a lot of bears in the mountain, a lot of bears.
Scott, could you tell us who you work for and how long you spent on the mountain?
Well, I'm representing myself tonight, but I do work for the Forest Service, and I spend 200 hours a month on the mountain, and I'm seeing a lot of bears. I don't know how it was before I showed up 3 years ago, but, I mean, on the LaSalle's, it's like Yellowstone some days. You just drive down the road, and there's bears on the road, and... I've got pictures of bears up here, right, 200 yards from a campground, and the bear's almost as tall as I am.
It's a big bear.
Yeah, it's a big bear.
Justin, do you have estimates on your populations for these units?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I don't know. I really don't. I mean, but according to the plan, that's why we base it off of the age of the males and the percent of the female in the harvest. I mean, clearly there's a lot of bears on the LaSalle's in San Juan, and I think is... this DNA study progresses a little bit more, we'll have better information relative to years past, whether it's growing or declining. But to give you a number, I'm not sure how much confidence I'd have.
And then one more question real quick. Do you know what the success rate is for your fall hunt on the guys that do have tags?
On
LaSalle's and San Juan, it's 5 permits each for this year, but what's your success rate on that with the hounds?
It's 4 out of 7. 4 out of 7. Which unit is that? LaSalle's? On the LaSalle's?
LaSalle's.
Okay.
Scott, I could probably add on the, at least on the estimate on bears, the first bear management plan we wrote, We tried to come up with a ballpark estimate for number of bears in the different units in the state. And what we did is we did some radio collaring studies on the LaSalles and also on the Book Cliffs. And we had another one up at Hobble Creek up around, you know, in the Provo area, around Springville up there. And we kind of used those as estimates of low, medium, and high density bears, bear populations. And we came up with a rough estimate of like a number of bears on the LaSalles would be around 300, but that's probably minus a few and plus a lot. But it's really hard to come up with an exact number, and that's why they went to these management objectives that indicate what, you know, in, you know, the trend of the.
Yeah, and I understand bears are hard to count. I had one more question. I'm trying to remember what it was. I'll just make it as a comment when the comment section comes around.
Yeah, thanks.
Any other questions from the public?
Quick question. I never did see in your presentation what the total number of tags you're proposing for 2012 is.
Yeah, I guess I just summarized it by I put the total number of limit entry, and that puts us up at 494. But then you can add in, and this is where it got kind of more difficult, and I didn't know exactly how to put those in or what would be the best way to put those spot and stock permits in, for instance. And there's another 30 there on the LaSalle and San Juan, so you can add another 60 to that. But there, and then we don't have a number for the quotas, of course, because we don't know how many people are going to show up for those. So I left it for comparison purposes at limited entry, but then do understand that there's some more additional tags, different kinds of tags that we didn't have before.
John, do you have an expected harvest for next year that you can compare what you expect to harvest next year compared to this last year?
Yeah, that's really hard. It, you know, we've got some other tools. We've got harvest objective. We've got some the spot and stock hunts. There should be more.
Okay.
But there's seasons, there's year, there's a lot of other factors on there. So I'd hesitate to give you a number.
I remember my question, if I can ask it.
Sure.
How much are you looking at as far as money-wise for your late season spot and stock for limit entry? Would it be on par with the other limited entries, or is it at a reduced rate, or how you plan on doing that?
Permit fee. I would guess we'd just have to do it just whatever the bear permit is, because the legislature hasn't approved any other fees, so
okay.
That's what it would be.
My name is Casey Black. Was I to understand that we don't know exactly how many bear we have? I'm strictly talking about San Juan, Elk Ridge. We really don't know. We don't have a good count. Okay. Is there a reason then that we cannot, that can we go to a harvest objective as opposed to a spot and stock? See how many we harvest that might give us an indication of if there's a lot of bear or not?
As far as the plan goes, it outlined three areas that we could have harvest objective, and the LaSalle's and San Juan didn't fit those molds. It's the 9 mile, the northeast region has one.
I guess I missed that. What qualifies them to be a harvest objective, or what did they lack?
It's a hunt strategy. It doesn't necessarily lack anything except knowledge on our part. We don't know how harvest objective is going to work, and so before using that on our, you know, two of our really good bear units, we figured we'd employ a different method. So we are testing it, harvest objective, in three different areas of the state, and we'll gain some knowledge from there to see whether we like it or not, to be honest.
I can add to that a little, Justin.
Okay.
I'll find that a little more, too. Yes, within the plan, it talks about setting the harvest objective units up on areas where one of the things, they can't be dominated by public land. So the units that you'll see where we have harvest objectives on, it has to be nuisance complaints driven, and it has to be places where public land isn't driving it. So even the Wasatch, we looked at the numbers of habitat, and based on the tribal lands and private inholdings and things, it's still a lot of private land, which helps. Essentially, it
it mellows out the effect of that, you know, how many people can get in the woods at one time. And the LaSalle and San Juan don't fit that mold, that according to the plan.
So the more private land, then the less amount of people there'll be, so you can have a harvest objective. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah. It's the idea of a driven. What
the plan does is it gives us those guidelines that if it's dominated by public land, we don't want to use a harvest objective on it. And then, like Justin said too, the other half of this thing is these are tests on these three different places. We're going to see how it goes, and then next cycle around, we'll see how we'll go forward with harvest objectives.
So if it's more public land, why do you not want harvest objective? Because there'll be too many people?
What can happen is the biggest concern, and the plan indicates this, is overshooting our quota. So there's that time gap between harvesting a bear and then having to report that bear. And if we have an area where there are lots and lots and lots and lots of people out on a Friday, they can overshoot the quota by 2, 3, 4 times before all the bears are even reported in. So it's a really powerful tool, but it's a tool we have to be careful on. And that's what's the plan, put those sideboards on us for that reason.
So with the harvest objective, you're supposed to call in every day and see what the count is, correct?
Yes.
Like lion.
But so you've still got to report it. What, you've got a 48-hour to turn it in.
So you said it would be overshot 2 or 3 times. If we have a quota of 30 bear and I don't report it for 2 days, do you really think that I'm going to take an extra 10 bear in that 48 hours?
Well, what I'm concerned about is what the plan dictates. These discussions were had then. I can't have those discussions now. It's up to the board. It's up to your comments. But the plan put those sideboards on it, and those are the reasons it put them there.
Okay. So I guess my question is would the board think about changing this or making a different recommendation? Also, can the Elk Ridge, San Juan be split in 2 units, maybe have a harvest objective on Elk Ridge and have a spot and stock on San Juan? Is that something that could be done?
I mean, yeah, clearly the RAC can recommend whatever they'd like to the Wildlife Board. I guess what we're really getting at is we want to test these out on units where there's a lot of private land, because if we can't make harvest objective work on a lot of private land, we shouldn't kid ourselves and think it's going to work on public land. And these are public land-dominated units. And so I guess the RAC can do what they'd like, but my plea would be let us see how this works on the way we pitched it. But down the road, that's a possibility, I guess, if things work out. So.
Okay, thank you.
Lloyd Nelson, Sunrise Outfitting. Does the division want to lower the bell population, keep it the same, or raise it? You don't even know? Come on, guys.
Yeah. No. What we want to do is again, we want to balance, and I understand your concerns. We want to balance all those things. We want the resource there.
It's a valuable resource. Do you want the bear population where it's at? Raise it. What is the division? They had to have meetings. Where did the division want the bear population? Where it's at? Higher or lower?
We're thinking of this again in terms of those ratios. We want to moderate our harvest objectives, light, moderate, liberal, the way it is. Populations, we can't give you a good estimate of exactly how many bears are out there, but we can tell you is, are we harvesting our bears heavily, where they're going to have a problem sustaining it, or are we harvesting them really lightly, where we're going to have a lot more bears? And what we've done, and here's your answer, is 75% of those units are in that moderate to light. So we're looking at keeping our bears populations.
You say, are we harvesting them heavily where they can't sustain it? If we got 10,000 bears up there, how do we know how heavy we're harvesting them, whether they can sustain it or not, if we don't know how many bears are there?
And that's the essence of those, watching those population ratios of those females. If we're getting into too many females, then the plan will kick us into backing off permits. So we, according to this plan, if we get into where we're getting a unit that should be moderate or light, and we get a bunch of females in there, then we will back off on those permits. So we're set to kind of do this But keep it from going that way or keep it from going that way. There are sideboards based on those ratios that keep us from going too far one way or the other is the idea.
And then also, why do we try and limit punters when the opportunity is there? Why limit them punters to a draw when the opportunity is there to help?
Again, these are limited entry units, and that's the only way we've ever been able to manage bears in the past. This plan does open up the door for a lot more opportunity. Well, it does with harvest objective and spot and stock. And yeah, we have more tags today than we have in the history of bear management. So that does equate to more opportunity. It does.
Any other questions from the public?
Dean Lyman, I'm pretty ignorant to a lot of this stuff, and I'm learning a whole bunch this evening. The harvest objective, I understand they don't want a couple of bears to go over the harvest objective. The harvest objective has worked on the lions on public land forever. What's the difference between harvest objective on the bears or on the lions?
Yeah, so with limited entry, it's a set amount of permits, 20 permits. You can't possibly kill more than 20 bears or 20 lions. With harvest objective, it's a quota. So say we wanted 10 bears killed. The problem is there's more than 10 hunters out there. I mean, you could have, in theory, 100 hunters out there. And so that's the potential to go over the quota is real on a harvest objective unit, whereas limited entry, it's not. Does that help? Understood?
No.
Help you? I'm not really.
It's the same with lions as it is with bears.
Or lions are in the same way right now. Harvest objective.
It's a harvest objective. On
sure. 300 hunters can be out there.
Can go hunt lions.
There is one difference with bears, that if you look at historically at the when bears are harvested, you know, I can't tell you the exact number, but I did a study one time where I looked at it, but the vast majority of bears are killed the last week of the spring season. So, I mean, and the reason is because you have poor access in April, and so and the also the sows are basically in their dens until about the 10th of May. You know, they start moving, well, they're out a little earlier, but they start moving around about the 10th of May. And so all of a sudden you're starting to get bears moving around the Memorial Day weekend, and we, you know, it seems like over 70% of the bears are killed that have in some years been killed that last week. So if you have, let's say on the LaSalle's, you had 100 hunters out there Memorial Day weekend, it would be really easy to overshoot that quota. And there's no data right now to know, and so that's why we're going with a conservative approach to test it out, and then we'll go from there.
So, Bill, you said the last week of the spring season is when most of the bear take
it. That's when it has been historically.
So we're talking about October for harvest objective.
Yeah, you're right.
So it would really wouldn't matter, would it?
Well, let's just turn back to John and Justin on that. You caught me there with that.
Again, I think, and these are really valid, I mean, these are valid points. These are valid questions. These are things that... I've been calling this a bit of a sausage-making process as far as balancing all these things and coming up with the best recommendations that we can. But the thing that I get in my mind is with bears, it is more constrained. You only have those, you've got a shorter time than with lions. So that's some of it. The other thing that really drove it, and this is even more on that spring one, again, where you've got a short period of time where you can get a lot of people out because they need to get out during that time. So, but we can definitely give these things more thought too.
But we keep jumping back to spring. We're not talking about spring for harvest.
Right.
It's strictly October. So,
I just think biologically over the whole year, you know, for reverses, we've got them denning. You know, we've got winter snows, late springs, early winters, a lot of other factors. That can give people a lot more pressure in terms of harvesting their bear. That's one approach to look at it.
Yeah, and to catch myself, the principle is actually the same, though, because if you have a lot of people looking to go out and hunt just before they think the quota is going to fill, you just have no way of controlling how many there will be. So,
But in your experience with lions, we get down to two permits, and all these people with harvest objective tags run out there because they want to fill their tag. How often do you go over that quota?
We do go over.
But substantial? That you can't say, okay, we went over 5 above the 30 this year, so let's cut it back a little the following year because we took a few more.
5 to 8 lions a year on official lands with this story.
What's that?
5 to 8 lions per year on official
lands
with this story. And I can talk to you later. Let me throw a question. It's a question I keep bringing up, and it goes back to the lions. Why in this day and age do we not change a 48-hour tip in, or at least a call-in, to 12 hours? There is nowhere in this state that you cannot be in cell phone service within 12 hours. Maybe the fishing game person doesn't need to come tag it and check it in, but at least it can be documented as a harvest event. Question I've had, and I think it could solve a lot of it, is there anything legislative that says you have to do 48 hours to make that phone call?
There isn't anything in statute or rule that dictates the 48 hours. A lot of it's probably tradition, but when we've talked about it in the past, there's been resistance from you may be in agreement of changing, but there's a lot of people that aren't because of the constraints of getting down and getting harvested. And it's not just a bear was killed, it's the sex and the age and all those other things that go into, especially with female subquotas, not just that a bear's killed, but what's the sex of the bear, and that needs to be confirmed by one of our folks checking them in. And on the question, going back to the question on the difference between bears and lions, the difference is susceptibility to harvest. Lion harvest is driven by snow in the winter. There's very few lions harvested on dry ground. Almost all the bears are harvested on dry ground. They're more susceptible to hounds in during that time of the year. With lions, the harvest tracks the snow. You don't have a dynamic like that kind of becomes self-limiting for bears like it does with lions. Does that make any sense?
Well, we're talking about harvest objective without hounds in the month of October. Still spot and stalk, but a harvest objective. No lions, but by a tag.
Okay, I misunderstood. So that doesn't apply to you could have the limitation there is just the sideboards, like John said, that the plan put on. It said the plan based on the people, and you know, these things are put together with big groups and everybody has their input, and what came out of the advisory group is for the first recommendation cycle we do 3 units harvest objective. And that's what we've recommended. We're recommending in accordance with the plan. Bottom line. So we were limited to 3, and the 3 we chose for specific reasons.
Could we get you to come up with the microphone and state your name and ask the question?
What this gentleman mentioned here about the Dean Lyman, do you have to mention the name every time?
Well,
okay, I'll do it every time.
It's for the transcriber.
Okay, sorry, I'm ignorant to what's going on here. So anyway, the 12 hours shuts down the quota. It's got nothing to do with the sex of the animal or anything else. So the people that are hunting call in for the quota at no closed. The sex of that animal can be turned in anytime. What he was talking about was 12 hours to close the quota.
And that's on a straight harvest, on a straight quota unit, that'd be the way it goes. But there's some of the units that have a female sub quota as well. And those are the ones I was referring to.
Up to that last day, in the last 12 hours, that female shut it down anyway.
You know, and the bottom line, there's a lot of different ways we could do this. That's probably just as valid as what we've recommended, and that's what the public process is about, is for these guys to take our recommendation and take your input and try to make sense of all of it. And so that's what we're here for. Yeah, no. So there's more than one way to skin a cat, and there's more than one way to hunt a bear. So.
Lloyd Nielsen again, Sunrise Outfitting. If you guys are so scared of over-harvesting these bears, don't that tell you there's way too many bears?
Let's keep it to questions right now. We'll get to comments in a minute. Thanks, Lloyd.
Lloyd, the San Juan and Los Alamos is in a moderate target area, which moderate by nature means we're trying to keep things stable. Now, if you look at the data the last several years, there is room to increase bear harvest, both the number of bears and the percent of female in the harvest. If you look at the sideboards on this plan, where we moderate 30 to 40% female in the harvest, the last 3-10 years, I mean, however you want to look at those data sets, 3-year gaps, 5 years, 10 years, it all says that we've harvested around 31-32% female in the harvest. So can we increase? Yes, we can. And that's why we feel with the spot and stock on these units provides a little bit more opportunity. And if we get into the females a little bit more, it's okay because our own data suggests that we have room to do so. So.
Yeah, don't run away. Come here. So in reality, your harvest objectives in the fall, you have a limited entry and you have 30 tags. You're not going to get any bear kill. If you have a harvest objective and you have 100 people by tags, you're going to have a higher harvest. Am I reading into this wrong?
Yeah, and there's a lot that goes into that. It would depend.
So if you were going to have a harvest objective in the fall, you'd need to reduce your tags, or you may have a 30 bear kill in the fall if you have a whole bunch of people hunting the sows.
What?
Or the San Juan.
Yeah. So just to clarify.
No, am I wrong?
Well, let me clarify. Because there are two different things. Right now we have 30 spot and stock permits.
Right.
And how much harvest are we going to have? I don't know, to be honest. Really don't. We haven't done it in Utah. Colorado says that their spot and stock hunts are about 12%
success. Well, that's what I'm saying. You're pretty safe to say to get 10.
Sure.
You're lucky.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
If you increase your hunters 10-fold, 20-fold, you're going to kill more bear.
Yeah, but I guess where the clarification needs to come from is, just because we have 30 spot and stock hunters doesn't mean if we went harvest objective that our quota would be 30. It would probably be lower than that.
Well, you'd have to.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, we're on the same page.
I just want to see if we're on the same page.
Yes.
My name is Colby Christensen. I'm going to kind of stray off the path a little bit here, but I'm just curious, and I know there's a few of us that are also curious, if there's any statistics, information, facts that the way a high-density population of bears affects the deer population.
There's been a number of studies done on bears and bear effects to deer. I can think of three offhand, including one in Utah, that one out of every 25 of the fawns killed was by bear. Other studies, 3%, 5%. So it tends to be, in terms of fawn take, relative to other animals out there, the bears are really tiny compared to coyotes and cougars.
Casey Black, I want to jump back to kind of the same topic. If we've said we don't know how many bear we have, correct?
Well, we have an educated guess.
Educated guess based on however many
on
females are on the string
and
test.
And also on radio telemetry studies.
So we have that data there, and we have... I just lost my train of thought. Sorry. Well, it might come back to me.
can I address one part of this is something interesting about modern wildlife management, and it's unsettling in a lot of ways to a lot of people, but it's very, very difficult to estimate with any kind of precision the numbers of animals on the landscape. What we're a lot better at is measuring things that indicate the number of animals on the landscape, or even better, trends. That's why the genetic study is really interesting, because what we're measuring there is the trend up or the trend down. That's something that we can measure with reliability. And then we know from the sex ratios or the ratios if the population is going to go up or is going to go down. So it's kind of interesting, but as a wildlife manager, I'm okay that we don't know exactly how many animals there are out there, because we have this other information that still allows us to keep our population, whatever it is, within certain target levels. So I just want to clarify that.
came back to me.
Good.
And it's relation to deer, and maybe I shouldn't ask this question. But you said the bear killed 1 in 25 fawns, roughly 3%.
No. Relative to other predators, out of every 25 fawns were killed, 24 were done by other predators. One is bear, so one real small percent.
So if, for instance, say we have Elk Ridge and we have a higher density of bear there than elsewhere, and we have a low density of deer, would a high density of bear have a bigger impact on the deer because there's not as many? And would there be a reason to increase the bear tags on Elk Ridge?
That's tough to measure. I mean, clearly there's a low density of deer on Elk Ridge, and there's a high density of bears. Is that cause and effect? I don't know. And again, just to reiterate, we are getting aggressive with bears on the San Juan unit, and we'll have close to 80 tags this year, which again, harvest is going to occur on Elk Ridge at a higher rate than we've seen in the past, and so I don't know if it fully addresses your concern with that, but yeah.
Well, I understand that, and I understand we're going to have more tags, but if from what you just said to me, we have high bear and low deer. Can't we experiment 1 year on Elk Ridge? Just take a small unit and experiment and see what happens. I'm not saying get rid of the bear. We all enjoy bear. We love to see bear. We love to chase bear. But have an experiment and see what happens. And, you know, change it from 1 year to the next. And strictly have a harvest objective, spot and stock for the month of October, Elk Ridge. I don't know this gentleman's name, but he brought up the on the end there, he brought up the topic, well, if you have a harvest objective, you're going to harvest more bear. Well, I would think everybody in this room would probably agree, if you have 30 spot and stock tags, you're probably not going to harvest 30 bear.
Sure.
You said Colorado has a success rate of what, 12%? 3.6 bear, then out of 30 is what you're expecting to harvest out of a spot and stock.
Let me be clear. I also said I don't know. I mean, that's the neighboring state. That's the closest data we have. We've never done this. And again, if you think we need to be more aggressive, but by all means, make a recommendation to the RAC. But this was a start, and so we wanted to look at it for 3 years and see where it went.
Casey, just so you got something to do on the comment period, let's try to stay with questions right now.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Any other questions?
One quick question. Disagree. There has been spot stock last 2 years on the book list. What is the percentage on that?
Last year, I think I looked, there was one spot and stock permit on there. Was it? It was. And it was. I'm not sure how I think it's what came out in this year's. I don't have the date on that. The one, it was five, I think, were harvested out of the 79. It was something like that.
And that was spot and stock.
We can look that up.
I think it's at least 50%
almost. Yeah, I just looked that up yesterday.
Well, John, are there any other questions from the public?
Calvin Black. How did you come up with the date of October the 6th, 29th on a spot and stock?
Sure. It's more of a social issue. What we wanted to do was give people that are in the field, deer hunting or elk hunting or something like that, the opportunity to get one of these tags and spot and stock a bear while they're out and about. This is a time where we don't have any other bear hunts going on, and we thought it would mesh well with the deer and elk hunts on these units. So,
but that's only 23 days.
Yeah.
We hunt cow elk for 5 months. Right?
Right.
So why can't we hunt spotted stock in the month of September as well?
These are all good questions.
So that's when all of the acorns are, well, the acorns are coming on the latter part of August, but that would be more optimal. And if you shot 30 bear in spot and stock, would you be nervous?
I don't think under the current strategy we would. I mean, we're just over 50% with dogs. I can't imagine we're going to be above that without dogs.
How much pressure do you get from the environmentalists on these bear hunts?
I don't know.
How about the houndsmen? I almost get the impression that bear and lion are the elite animals. They're sacred and on the top of the pedestal of animals to hunt, and we make every effort in the world to make sure those numbers are high.
Let's keep it to questions right now. We'll get to comments in just a minute.
Why are you hunting? Why do you want to hunt kill more female bears in the beaver unit?
The harvest objective on the beaver has a female sub quota. Is that what you're referring to? So it's the number of, it'll be a total number of bears, 10, or a female sub quota of 6, if I'm 4, sorry, thank you, if I'm remembering right. So it's not about killing more female bears, it's about adjusting that percentage so either you get to 4 females or you get to 10 total bears, is the way the quota works on that.
Do you ever look at the terrain in terms of how to manage bears? Charlie, are you still here? Would you rather hunt bear at the base of the Blue Mountain or out in Dark Canyon? I'm just wondering if the terrain is ever considered when you determine harvest numbers. I would suggest, because of the Elk Ridge unit is not surrounded by any agricultural lands, there's only one section out there that's farmed. Other than that, it's all public land, and all of the winter range coming off of the Elk Ridge is also public land. I would like to make a comment that...
Comments are going to be later, and no, I need you to fill out a comment card, please.
I've got the follow-up numbers for that Bookcliffs spot and sock. Three out of 7 were harvested.
Thanks, John. Any other questions from the public? Okay. If you want to make a comment, you need one of these yellow cards. So fill them out and just bring them up and send them up here, and we'll start going through them right now. Lloyd, you're first.
Lloyd Nelson, Sunrise Outfit. I think you've heard from the public. This is public input, what we'd like. I don't understand why. What I would suggest is that we take and we put a split season down here on the San Juan. You've got the first season just like it was a draw, with however many bears you want to fill as a quota user. The first season's a draw, like the lions. The second season then, which is your fall season, goes to harvest objective for the bears that is not filled. We need to fill some of these bear tags, and then not having any hounds on the mountain in the fall to compete with the deer, the elk, the archery hunters, and all the other hunters that are up there. So if you want 80 bears taken off the San Juan, which I think we need to get awful aggressive on, you draw 80 tags, and then what is left over is not filled, can be filled in the fall, just like the lions, with a spot and stock only method. And then that will give hunter opportunity that while they're down here hunting, they got to use the method that's available, whether it's archery hunting, muzzleloader, or deer, so these poor game wardens don't chase down a rifle hunter during archery season. But while they're down here hunting, they can, if they see and come across the bear, they can harvest that the bear. And they've done said that spot and stock, we shouldn't go over by that far. Thank you.
Lloyd, just for clarification, the fall spot and stock will be no hounds, no bait?
No hounds, I don't care. No hounds, no bait, spot and stock.
And then you also want the fall spot and stock to start in August with the archery hunt?
Yes, sir. I have no idea why 1,000 houndmen
can come run over the top of people that have been waiting 19 years to draw. When I can run dogs on Elk Ridge Unit for 360 days a year, I can be up there running dogs. How come do I get to run over people that's waited 19 years to draw a tag, and they get 10 days? That just don't seem right to me. And I'm handsome.
I know that. Scott Watson.
Scott Watson. I just like to say that I don't want to see the Bears wiped out. You know, I like seeing them up there. People like seeing them up there. I get a lot of comments on them. They saw a bear. For the most part, it's good. You know, I don't know that we need to deplete the population of the Bears down to nothing, but I have to agree with Lloyd in that we're getting a lot of conflicts in the fall with people running dogs. You know, there's only 5 permits on here, but in my experience, some of these guys chase dogs during the whole time that they can chase. They run the dogs after the bears the whole time that they can. They treat a bear 2-3 times a day, and they don't take them. They're just not interested in taking them, and we're not doing any service to these guys that put in for 19, 20 years. I know that a lot of these bear hunters put in for quite a few years on the Elk Ridge and on these hunts too, but we're not doing a service to the guys that really put in a lot of time for the deer and the elk hunts. There's a lot of, I get a lot of comments about dogs, and I hear dogs out there in the fall during the archery hunt, and I know guys are pretty upset about it. I get a lot of comments on it, so that's my only comment is that maybe we ought to look at, you know, we give opportunities in the spring and in the summer for pursuits. You know, let's look at doing a quota system in the fall with the spot and stock and see how that turns out.
Casey Black.
First of all, thank you guys for your time. I know it's not easy being here. I would like the RAC to take under consideration making a change in the San Juan Elk Ridge unit to split it into two units, going to a harvest objective on both, if not mainly on Elk Ridge, and using Elk Ridge as an experiment and taking a few more deer and see if the numbers still sustain themselves and if it would help with the deer population. Thank you.
Tony Bettis.
Tony Bettis with the Utah Hound Association. We'd like you guys to take into consideration to leave the fall hunt as it is. This is a premium bear unit, and two of the premium bear units in the state is LaSalle and San Juan. And I got to go with what Lloyd said. You know, I do agree with the fact that you're putting in for 15 years to draw an elk tag. We're putting in for 12. So who's to say who justifies one tag over the next? So we would like to see it stay to the 30th of September or at least to the 20th. That way we can have the opportunity to harvest the bear when he has got his hair back. And then the other thing we'd like you to do, because this is a first-time deal on your spot and stock, and so we don't over-harvest the bears and take too many, we'd like to see it start out at 10, 15, and 20. Let's build into it instead of depredating the whole thing and killing everything off. You know, we want to see the bears stay. It's what we enjoy to do, and thanks for your time.
Tony, are you representing yourself or the Houndsman Association?
Houndsman Association.
Thanks. Calvin Black.
I appreciate the fact that you're looking at some different things on this bear hunt, especially the spot and stock, but I would suggest that you look at additional time, August or September as well. But I do also think you need to look at the harvest objective as well. I would suggest that the it's a related matter. I would suggest that the division look at the Elk Ridge unit as a potential study area in relation to lion bear predation on the deer. As I mentioned earlier, you do not have any public, private land, agricultural land around the Elk Ridge unit. Would anybody be growling about deer and elk on the private lands and fields and whatnot? I think it would be a great thing. Guy, how many permits did we have last year on Elk Ridge? 45 total?
40. No, 50. 50 total.
But it's been that way for quite a few years.
No, it's gone from 20 to 30 about 5 years ago, and then a little longer than that. Then it went to 30 and then, or 40, and last year it was 50.
So
it's jumped up about
10. I think it would be an excellent opportunity to do a study. We always like studies to verify things. I think there ought to be an increase of bear and mountain lion permits out there and see what happens to the deer herd. I question that a bear only takes one out of 25 fawns. With the density numbers of bear and the low density of deer, I think that would be an excellent opportunity to see what could happen in predator control. Thank you.
Guy Webster.
I here represent myself, and I think all of you guys have been emailed a copy of this from Roy Andrew, and myself and nearly 100 people, very well respected housing. State of Utah, we're severely concerned about the vast increase to bear permits issue. 2010, it was 372. That was 20-year high. We're 45% proposed increase on that. That's way too many. This particular region recommend that we have no more than 10 spots stocked on either the South or the San Juan. One little thing, and I've spoken with Roy and several other people on this, do understand there is a conflict with the Elk Hunters, San Juan Elk Ridge's premium tag. In this, it was listed as August 20th to September 30th. We've discussed that and understand that that is an issue and would amend that to August 5th to September 10th to try to reduce that conflict but still allow ample opportunity in the fall to get out, harvest mature bear. And a couple other things that haven't been discussed. One particular thing is in this particular unit, 9 Mile Harvest Dick, the conservation tag, just to be able to go ahead and do that and make that a premium tag so it's able to hunt all three seasons. I think minor adjustments. Conservation tags are bringing a lot of money into that. The recommendation would be statewide that some of you guys can invest here locally. But bottom line, you know, on Los Alamos, for instance, there's 77 tags. The adjustment, we're looking at potentially 300 bears. That's, you know, not that it could happen, but that's it's got the possibility that one in four bears could be killed in a particular year. I know on the book list, the spot stock has been close to 50% the first year and stuff. So I think let's go moderate with 45% increase in tags. That's just way too many in one year. Thank you.
That's all the comment cards I have.
Hey, Darius. I've got a comment from somebody else that they emailed me, wanted me to present for them.
Okay.
This is from the Utah Bowman's Association. It says, the Utah Bowman's Association supports the DWR's effort to provide an increased opportunity to hunt bears via harvest objective hunts. However, the current recommendation inadvertently eliminates an existing opportunity to hunt bear over bait on the Wasatch Current Creek unit. Therefore, we recommend implementing a spring limited entry archery only hunt to the Wasatch Mountain Current Creek. Abenaquin unit. In addition to the spring harvest objective unit, the purpose of this recommendation is to continue to offer the opportunity to hunt over bait on the unit during the spring hunt. We recommend this hunt run concurrently with the DWR's recommended harvest objective hunt as follows. Hunt 1, spring harvest objective hunt, DWR's recommendation, season April 7th through June 3rd, or until harvest objective is met. Harvest objective of 7 bears changed from DWR's recommendation to allow for archery hunt. Allow unlimited over-the-counter tags. Allow spot and stalk hunting methods. Allow hound hunting methods. Allow any legal weapon. And do not allow baiting. Hunt 2, spring limited entry archery only hunt, season April 7th through June 3rd. Number of tags issued, 7. Target to kill is 3 bears based on the 10-year average. Success rate of 40% per the 2010 annual Black Bear Report. Allow spot and stalk hunting methods. Allow baiting. Allow hound hunting methods and allow only archery tackle. It says this implementation of a combined limited entry hunt and harvest objective hunt would allow an increased opportunity for both hunters pursuing with hounds and hunters who prefer to hunt over bait with archery tackle. Allow hound hunting via over-the-counter tags provides unlimited opportunity for houndsmen. At the same time, it potentially reduces the application pool for the limited entry tags and thus provides better draw odds for those who prefer to hunt with archer tackle over bait. The numbers represented above for the harvest objective and the numbers of tag issued on the limited entry hunt is based on the 10-year bear harvest objective that has been recommended. The split of the target of the 7 bears taken by harvest objective hunters and 3 bears taken by limited entry archery hunters is based on the split of method to take in the 2010 annual Black Bear Report. Utah Bowlesman Association understands that there is potential for a houndsman to run his dogs off an archery bait. However, this potential conflict is far better than the complete elimination of baiting opportunity. In addition, every unit in the state, with the exception of a Book Cliff spot and stalk unit, currently allows both the running of hounds and baiting to occur at the same time. Whether or not legal baits are allowed, the potential for a houndsman to establish an illegal bait to run their hounds from still exists. If you have hunters that have established legal baits on the unit, it is their self-interest to help police the other hunters in the field that may be establishing illegal baits and thus create a better self-policing hunt. On November 30th, Jim Karpowitz, director of the Division of Utah Wildlife Resources, stated that due to future DWR funding and budget concerns, conservation officers are going to be difficult to find when you need them. Therefore, a better self-policing hunt is in the best interest of all parties involved. If you have any questions and concerns or would like to further discuss these recommendations, please feel free to contact Ben Lauder at 801-369-0117.
Thanks, Travis.
You want a copy of that?
Do you have it, Brent?
Yeah, make sure Brent has one.
Anyway, that was this from Ben Lauder, Utah Bowlesman Association.
Thanks.
You want a copy?
Well, I've seen there's no more comment cards from the public. We'll go ahead and public comment period and open it up to the rack for discussion. And kind of a quick summary, looks like we've got some interest for increasing permits, some increase for decreasing permits, interest in splitting the San Juan unit, making Elk Ridge kind of a study area to try to nuke predators. Changing the fall dates, some as late as the 30th of September, some as early as the 10th of September to eliminate the conflict with limited entry elk hunters, and Yuba's request for archery only to help increase the problem tag. And harvest objective fall hunt on the San Juan with the spring limited entry. Okay, with that, you guys make good sense of that and come up with a really good recommendation.
I've got one question and comment. This is a simple one based on maybe some of the other things they got to tackle. On the Manti South Bear Unit, will the extended season be eliminated?
The extended season from 2008 to 2011. Based on the language in the current plan, it states that we'll have season extensions in the spring. If there's high depredation loads or high bear nuisance conflict loads, the South Manti fell out of that. And so based on sticking to the plan as much as we can, it got taken out as well. And so it won't be in there. Conversely, the North Manti suddenly does have a spring extension because harvest by Wildlife Services exceeded that of sportsmen. So, yeah.
I appreciate that. And I appreciate all the effort that went into the management plan, and I think there's some great tools in there. One thing on the South Manti that I believe it's a real unique unit, and so maybe some of its issues are not addressed in the plan, and those are there's six main access routes from the Fair and Price side on the South Manti Bear Unit. Of those six access points being Miller's Flat, Jules Valley, Cottonwood, Farron Canyon and Link Canyon, five of those have seasonal closure gates on those. The last 2 years haven't opened up till about the 5th of June. Other years, it may be mid-May. The reason I bring this up, because as a Forest Service, the reason those closures are in is because of amount of funding. Those are clay-based roads that have gravel on top, and so when they dry out, it saves Forest Service a large percentage of money, so they don't have to go three services every year. But we do hear a lot of comments from the houndsmen that those gates are closed. With losing that extension, I believe that a lot of that harvest that being those gates are real difficult for the houndsmen to be able to get up there anyway. You'll lose that harvest. One of the unique things with the South Manti is from in the Farron and Price district only, you have 44,000 sheep. And with that, I believe is if you eliminate that extension, what you'll end up seeing is a lot of harvest by Wildlife Services instead of hunters. So anyway, we'd recommend that we continue that extension on South Manti.
If I may, Darius.
Sure.
Kevin, after I talked to you on the phone about this issue, I pulled some numbers for the RAC, if you're interested on it, as far as how much harvest do we really get during that last week on the South Manti. Over the last 4 years when we've had this, 16 bears have been killed on the South Manti, five of which have come in that last week. So it's about a 30-year harvest. However, last year, 2011, this spring and last spring, where we had quite a bit more snow on some of these issues, we killed seven bears, four of which were killed in the last week of that season extension. And so that's the data as far as how much harvest we really get during that last week on the South Manti.
Well, what's going on with
you? Okay.
You know, you listen to all this, listen to how people, listen to the other people, and you have your fall conflict with hunters, okay, hounds and people with elk tags and all that going on. You have your summer thing, you're going to try your experiment with the bears. Have you ever thought about maybe extending your spring hunt to the end of June, eliminate your summer problems with everybody running them out, and give the bears a rest? You know, put some of your pressure back in the spring, because your female harvest has gone up every year. It's gone up every year, am I wrong?
It depends on the unit, not necessarily.
I mean, for Utah, I mean, looking at your own data, it's gone up every year, the percentage.
Statewide perspective?
For like 5 years?
Yeah, I'm looking at 3-year average.
Sure.
But we pull some of your pressure back to the spring when you don't have your game hunters and stuff up there, and then work something out with your spot and stalk. Put your hounds in the spring.
Historically, you haven't always been able to run your, and you shouldn't be able to run your hounds year-round. I mean, I'm a houndsman. I've done it since the 80s, and maybe I'm off base, but let's give them a time out instead of hunting their ass from the time they come out of the den till they go to bed.
Yeah.
Maybe they need a time out.
Sure. The reason we haven't gone until the end of June on that hunt is because we do have data that every week that we extend these hunts, you know, starting the end of May, June, as you extend that another week and another week and another week, your percent female in the harvest increases substantially. And so what we'd eventually have to do is lower permits.
Substantially, because you're increasing it now.
There was a graph shown at the last Wildlife Board meeting.
The difference is that under the old plan, we had a target of less than 40% females in the harvest, and when we went to brought the spring hunt back, it drastically cut the percent female in the harvest.
Right.
And so for the last 6 years, what you've seen is it has gradually increased, but that's because we've increased the permits to try to get up to work towards that 40% without going over it. So that was by design to increase the percent females in the harvest.
So it's to reduce the bear.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Is there any data showing where most of the bears are harvested on the San Juan, whether it's Elk Ridge or on the Bajos? Is there any data showing where the bear is harvested on the San Juan, where the bear are being harvested more on the Elk Ridge or more on the Bajos?
Yeah, I don't know if I have that with me. We looked at that a year ago. Guy, do you remember what it was?
Most years it was split fairly evenly, but more so it leans a little bit more towards the Bajos. More
parts
than only bought. But some years it's pretty
easy.
Yeah.
So.
Wayne?
We have a bear plan that's just, this is the first year we're actually using it. This bear plan was passed in January of this year. And it sets out two different three-year periods, if I remember. I haven't read it for a bit, but to look at, you know, different ways of managing bears. And we haven't given any of, you know, we haven't given that even, you know, a season of a chance so far. So I feel like, one, this looks like a fairly reasonable sort of management plan to me. And I feel pretty good about it. I also think that people should read the bear management plan because it talks fairly extensively about predation by bears, and you can find out a lot in there. It's not, you know, it's a fairly good document. They've really done a lot of research, and so I'm fairly comfortable with following what they're recommending right now, even though I'm not fond of hound hunting and I'm not fond of baiting, so I would vote those out. but you know, for the most part, this seems like a way to start, and it gives us sort of a game plan for the next 6 years, and if that works, for the next 20 years, or the next 14 years after that. So that's my point.
Thanks, Wayne.
What determines a human-bear conflict, or on you guys' information?
Essentially, we categorize those. We have three different levels that we get them. I mean, if someone sees a bear out in the woods, that might be more of a level one if it's not that big of a deal. And it varies all the way to a level three where there's a serious issue or conflict with the bear. There's sideboards set up, and it's a judgment call. But as far as when we're talking the conflicts that were cited in the presentation, those are legitimate conflicts where we've had to respond, either trap a bear, euthanize a bear, do some hate, you know, techniques like that. So,
how many bear were caught out in Eastland this year again?
What do we have for this year, Guy?
This year?
Yeah.
Three.
How many last year?
Seven.
How many were kid on the road last 2 years?
Three this year.
Yeah. That means there's a high population of bear here. We're hitting them on the road.
We've had that before, though. We've had that before. We've had a lot of bears get on the road.
Any other discussion? Before some shot at a motion, I'd like you to consider this rack is totally within its prerogative to recommend whatever they want, but the current wildlife board, I think, is going to follow pretty much within the guidelines of the current bear management plan. So whatever the rack brings to them, if it isn't within the purview of the management plan, I don't think you've got a lot of hope of getting it through the board. So.
Well, I have one question to that. It looks like when the lion thing came out, that was wildlife board driven. It wasn't biologists, it wasn't anything else. So is this wildlife board driven interests? I mean, we got an SFW interest, we got wildlife board interest. Or I'd like one of you to sit up there and tell me if this is biologically driven, because the lion plan wasn't. And is that why we're revisiting this already? Because if it is, I don't see the purpose any of us are here.
Darren, I'll speak to this because, you know, John wasn't around when we put the plan together.
Okay.
The plan balances both the biological side and the social side. It's not at all driven by the wildlife board. We had a 10-year bear plan. It came to an end. We did a new 12-year plan. We're just following the cycle. We put together a committee like we do with deer and elk and everything else. That committee had houndsmen. It had livestock interests. It had environmental groups. It had members of the rack of different racks. So we tried to get as many people from as many different backgrounds as we could, and this is the strategy that they came out with. This wasn't driven by the board at all. This was just following our normal. You know, we put a plan out for a certain number of years. When it comes to the end of it, we write a new one.
So this isn't like the lion plan.
There was no. Yeah, we weren't asked to do anything in particular other than our plan came to an end and we wrote a new one.
I was involved in the first one, and I just decided 10 years, and it was over.
I'd like to entertain a motion if there's no further discussion.
One more comment first. Okay. On that 30 spot and stock tag, spot, yeah, anyway, spot and stock tags, was it? I mean, the dates are October 7th through the 29th, and that's going to interfere with the limited entry deer tags on the Elk Ridge as well. I mean, is there any going to be any conflict there, Guy, that you see?
Hard to say. You know, there's not that many people on Elk Ridge anyways, there's not that many people up there. I don't know if there's going to
I mean, with your current, with the limited entry deer hunts going the same time as the general season deer hunts, do you see a conflict of someone getting a bear tag hunting deer and bear on Elk Ridge with their general season deer tag?
Would there be a conflict? They could go hunt all of them at the same time.
What you're saying that
I mean,
of that limited entry deer
there's
tag.
There's been concerns in our area, just like this archery spike elk tags. People buying an archery spike elk tag and they got a regular general season deer tag and they're actually pushing the boundaries onto Elk Ridge and shooting their deer over on Elk Ridge. And I mean, I could see this being a possible issue too with the bear tags, general season deer tag, same time, same hunts. How are they going to be able to police it easy?
Jay, do you have any concern with that?
I mean, it's always a concern, but what you're talking about is the minority of the guys that limited to the 95-97% of the guys that are going to not give them that opportunity. I think the spike gel kind of thing on the bridge, we honestly haven't had any issues that we thought we might. And I think as far as this bear hunt's concerned, 30 guys over the boys on the bridge, while they could be out, spike gel coming on the upper bridge anyway, so as we see.
Okay.
They didn't think it was going to be a problem.
Yeah. Just let the record show that law enforcement wasn't overly concerned with the potential. Next time, you guys, come up and use them.
I would like to make a motion.
Okay.
I would move that we accept the recommendation as written. I do think that we should qualify that the Manti South unit should be looked at in terms of accessibility, and that has always been a problem area for predation. So maybe that needs to be adjusted, but I'm not sure what I would do, whether it was an extension or more numbers or something, but I think it should be revisited.
Okay, Wayne made the motion to accept DWR's recommendation as presented, with looking at the South Manti and the access.
It really isn't accessible for most of that hunting season.
So would you make a recommendation to put the extension on?
That would be my choice, but whatever it's your motion. Come up with. I don't know that I want to tell them what to do. I think it needs to be revisited and reconsidered, because this is a problem unit, and they probably ought to make sure that they're getting enough harvest in that one unit.
Okay. Wayne's motion is to accept DWR's recommendation as presented, with DWR looking at potentially putting the extension on the South Manti to make access it.
Sorry, I don't know if it's time or not. If we were to look at it, that's what we'd do, is just do a one-week extension, just to clarify. So,
okay.
Yeah.
You want to put that in your motion then?
Yep. Yes.
Okay. The motion is to accept DWR's recommendation as presented, with putting the season extension on the South Manti spring hunt. Is there a second to that motion?
Can I get a clarification?
Sure.
What we're going for here. We're going to okay the spot and stock, right?
Right.
Correct. And we're going to okay. Let me think here.
I mean, I'd like to see the fall on the San Juan and LaSalle be extended back to the September 30th, but use that last 2 weeks as a without hounds. But.
Okay. There's a motion on the floor. Do you want to make that in the form of an amendment?
We'll see if it's
going to have a second for the motion first. Okay.
Well,
you got your clarification, Charlie, or you need more?
I think so. I'm not quite clear on what.
DWR's recommendation for the San Juan was 35 conservation permits, or 35 limited entry permits, 2 conservation permits, 5 premium permits. Those are spring. And then in the fall, there was 5 permits. And then that's the August 20th to September 30th. And then
7. It's wrong on that sheet there.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. It changed that. 7. And then again, opening the 1st of November to the 20th of November, with a limited entry spot stock of 30 permits, October 7th through the 29th.
It's actually the 6th to the 29th.
6th to the 29th.
And then there'll be no houndsmen in the fall period. Is that correct? Am I understanding?
On the limited entry, there will be hounds.
There will be.
Isn't that correct?
From August 20th through September 7th, yeah. There would be.
But just August 20th to September 7th.
It would add
up
more than to begin.
The fall limited entry permit.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, I can't register.
That's okay. It's a good question. You need to know what you're voting on.
Are you interested in the LaSalle too, or is the San Juan the big question?
No, that's fine.
That's fine.
I would second that motion.
Okay. Wayne's motion has been seconded by Kevin. Travis, did you want to try for an amendment?
Yeah, I'd like to see if we can amend on LaSalle and San Juan, if they're in the fall season early, to at least keep it till September 30th as a basically spot and stock kind of strategy, so they could at least hunt their whole September.
Say that again.
I did not understand that. Try one more time.
So basically, from August 20th to September 7th, they can use hounds. They're being shut down by the rest of the... everyone else can hunt until September 30th. To allow them to hunt from August 20th to September 7th with hounds, if that's what they choose, but from September 7th to September 30th as a spot and stock, or if they're using archery tackle as bait, whatever is legal.
So a clarification on that, just to make sure I understand that. So that proposal would allow the people that draw a limited entry permit that allows them to hunt with hounds, that they could hunt the date specified now, but once those end, they could continue to hunt with spot and stock only until the end of the spot and stock hunt?
No.
And when does the spot and stock hunt end now?
The spot and stock starts October 6th.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
So you're just saying start the spot and stock as soon as the limited entry fall.
This is for those the limited entry tags only that draw the five fall permits.
Just those five hunters.
Well, plus the premium tags that get on, but they can hunt.
Of course, August the premium 20th. Hunters can hunt the spot and stock period too.
Okay. But they basically the fall hunt be from August 20th to September 7th with hounds if that's what they choose. But their hunt can be extended to the September 30th and hunt without hounds until then.
And Travis, what would you do with November 1st to the 20th?
That stays on there too. I mean, that's still like the rest of the state. Hounds. Yes.
Okay.
Hounds are always used on that part of the hunt. I mean, not if they choose.
And this amendment is just for the San Juan unit, or is this
San Juan and LaSalle?
And LaSalle. Okay. All right. The amendment motion is the limited entry fall permit holders can hunt their season, which is through the 7th of September, with hounds, at which time, starting on the 8th of September through the 30th of September, their permits will still be valid for a spot and stock hunt with no hounds, no bait. Is that what you
mean? No, they can still use bait.
Still use bait.
They can still, basically, you're just eliminating the hounds because that's what they want to do because of the conflict with the rest of the hunters.
Okay. All right, I think I got it. Is there a second to that amendment?
Second.
Okay. We vote on the amendment, and then we vote on the motion. Okay. All in favor of Travis's amendment of having fall limited entry hunters being able to hunt bears through the end of September with the elimination of dogs beginning on the 8th on the LaSalle and the San Juan unit. All in favor of that, say aye. All opposed? Amendment fails. So we have a motion on the floor of Wayne's to...
Hey, Garris, would you mind speaking in light of all the ones you were for, then I can subtract those who are against?
Travis, Jeff, and Chris were for the amendment. Okay, the motion on the floor from Wayne, seconded by Kevin, is to accept DWR's recommendations presented with the season extension on the South Manti. All in favor? All opposed? Daryl, Travis, and Jeff are the opposing votes. Motion carries. Jeff. Okay, that takes care of the bear we'll move on to make sure I'm in the right spot. Crossing guide to Jim Parrish. Let's go ahead and take care of our last action item. We can take all the conversations into another room. We'll continue with business here.
Jimmy.
I'm going to go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Okay. You don't mind.
All right.
Speak loud.
Speak louder, forever hold my peace, huh? All right. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, a lot of feedback. Mr. Chairman and members of the RAC, DWR staff, members of the audience, we're presenting the five-year review of Rule R-65720. That's the rule that governs or administers the sport of falconry in the state. We do have a set of recommendations with the review to present tonight. And as you know, every rule has a cycle that it goes through. And even though we just revised the falconry rule 2 years ago, it's in that annual or multi-year review cycle. And that's what we're coming around with tonight. In your package, you should have received a copy of the rule, which has specific recommendations and changes, corrections, clarifications. I will be referring to that in at least one part of the presentation here tonight. And then I also left a two-sided page that has two tables front and back. It's the same two tables that were in your packet, but in a little bit better shape. The ones in your packet weren't formatted too well. So it should be the same table, just formatted a little better for you to refer to as we go through the presentation tonight. What I'd like to present is just a brief overview of falconry in Utah. Some of you were not here when we did the complete rewrite of the rule a couple of years ago, so I'll go through that briefly. The actions that have taken place since the last review of the rule, and there's some federal actions that are very important that have taken place. Our recommendations for the current review will be in that, and then the guidebook tables, as I just mentioned, and then our summary of recommendations for this five-year review. Overall, we believe we're offering an increase in opportunity for individuals that wish to practice falconry in Utah, and excuse me, and I think you'll see that in the presentation tonight. Earlier we defined falconry, and the reason why I put this up for you is as the coordinator for the program in the state, I want the individuals that wish to participate to actually go out and fly the birds, actually try to take game. That's what falconry is all about. We do have some individuals that in the past have been basically keepers of birds of prey. That's not what I want to encourage. I want to encourage the individuals that are participating in the sport to go out and actually hunt with the birds. And so we've redefined falconry to be caring for and training raptors to pursue wild game. That's what the sport's all about, and hunting game with wild raptors. The definition also has terms concerning training, care, housing, transporting, and so forth, and that's in the rule. That didn't change with the five-year recommendations. But that's where we're headed with falconry in the state. In terms of the number of falconers in Utah, about 190, not too many down your way. Most of them are in the northern part of the state. In fact, Davis, Salt Lake, and Wasatch County account for about 85% of that 190 total. So the northern and central region
or where most of the falconers live in the state. And that's been pretty much the pattern over the last several years. There are three classes. This is common throughout the country. There's an apprentice class, essentially an entry-level class. And the classes are based on age and years of experience that an individual has. And we have about 46 apprentices in the state right now. After 2 years, they can apply for an upgrade to the general class. We have about 71 general class falconers. Then after an additional 5 years, they can qualify and apply for upgrade to a master falconer. That's the least restrictive class, and we have 74 members in that class in the state today. Since the last review, January of 2010, falconry in Utah, and it's still that way in some of the states, required both a state COR and a federal permit for an individual to be legal to keep these birds and hunt with them in the sport of falconry. In September of 2008, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service changed their rule. Basically, they wanted to turn administration of falconry back over to the states. States were given until 2014 to comply with the new federal standards. We were one of the first states to comply with the new standards. And so basically, Fish and Wildlife Service will no longer regulate falconry in Utah unless they change their minds again. But they did set some new standards, and we had to follow those standards, and we were in compliance with those. And that came around to the RACs as well as the board in January 2010. And then our new rule went to the service and was approved, and that's what's in place today. More specifics. Since then, again, falconry being regulated solely by the state, there's a limited take of wild raptors. There are species restrictions by class of falconer, and I'll go through those briefly here in just a minute. They can report their activities electronically. Like everything else we do, they have to have some reporting and end-of-year types of things. They can do that online now. At one time, they couldn't. It had to be a form that was turned into the regions. But now it's available to them electronically as well as the paper forms. The banding requirement, the service relaxed that requirement to band each individual bird that's in the sport. Or the falconers have the option to implant a microchip in the birds if they wish to do that. So kind of high-tech tracking of things with all the technology that's out there today. Facilities requirements were relaxed. Mainly, individuals can keep these birds inside their house if they wish to do that. The house has to be available for inspection by our conservation officers if they do that. But that is an option that the service allowed, and we complied with that as well. Some new definitions, as I mentioned before. We already had a 3-year apprentice class COR. What we've now offer is a 5-year COR for the general and master class falconers instead of the year-to-year that they had before. And quickly, I will refer to the rule, so if you want to look in your packets, primarily I've got the section numbers and the pages. There's editorial corrections and clarifications throughout, and we won't go into those with detail, but sections 2, 18, and 29 in particular had some editorial-type things and some terms that needed to be clarified and some section numbers that needed to be cleared up. But one of the big changes is in Section 3 and Section 16, where it's mentioned on the minimum age to practice falconry or participate in falconry. It was changed from 14 to 12. The Fish and Wildlife Service allowed that change, and we complied with that. That was actually changed in another part of state code, and so now we're recommending on the 5-year review that our rule also reflect that change. If an individual is under the age of 18, they still have to have a parent or guardian sign for them, but they can enter the sport at age 12. This is a little bit of techno stuff in terms of terminology. At one time, all of these birds were classified under the order Falconiformes. Just within the last year, the American Ornithologist Union has split that order into two terms, Axipitriformes and Falconiformes. It's still the same birds, but we changed those sections 1, 2, and 11 in the rule just to comply with the new terminology based on that action. And then more particularly, on pages 12 and 13, and section 16, 17, and 18, on general and apprentice general and master class falconers, there is a separate listing of birds that the Fish and Wildlife maintains. It's a birds of conservation concern, and they have a national and a regional list of birds that are of conservation concern. And earlier, they were going to restrict those birds from being used in falconry for all three classes, but now it's only a restriction for the apprentice class, the entry class, and not for the general and master class. We didn't have enough time to change the copy of the rule that went out in the packets after we clarified this with the service. So the reason for the highlight on those sections, sections 17 and 18 on page 13, which deal with those two classes, with general and master, that language will not be changed, even though it reflects a change in your packet. It will not be changed in our five-year review. We're recommending that be left the way that it was. In terms of restrictions of the birds, and this kind of refers to the table that I handed out to you, the big difference is with golden eagles and peregrine falcons. In terms of the list of birds, apprentice class falconers cannot possess birds that are taken out of their nests. They also cannot possess a raptor that is imprinted for several reasons. One is there can be a little bit of, they can be pretty aggressive. If an imprinted bird is imprinted on, say, you or a person, a human, that person is just another bird to them. And so there's some chance that a person in the apprentice class that doesn't have the experience that the other classes could be injured, so we don't allow them to possess an imprinted raptor. Also, if an imprinted raptor escaped, it can maybe harm someone else. So we don't allow them to possess imprints. They also cannot possess hybrids of North American species. And back to this birds of conservation concern, the national list, they can't possess wild-caught birds that are on the services list of species of concern. General class falconers only have one restriction. They cannot possess golden eagles, either eagle, bald or golden, but they cannot possess, we don't have bald eagles on the list of birds available to them, but they cannot possess eagles, period, and that would include golden eagle. And master class falconers can possess golden eagles, but they may not possess bald eagles. And that's the only difference in the two lists that you have on the table, is golden eagle being available to general and master class falconers. But not to, I mean, to master class falconers, but not to apprentice and general class. There is some clarification also we're recommending on wild caught raptors. We needed to clarify that a little bit. They can catch two replacement wild caught raptors within a year if they lose the bird or it dies or something happens. On the sale and barter of captive bred raptors, only general and master class falconers have that privilege. Facilities inspections. Our procedure up until now was that they had to either write or email into the region where they live requesting an inspection of their facilities. We've modified that, and now they call into the region, make an appointment with a conservation officer to come out and inspect their facilities, and we're changing the rule to reflect that that procedure for now. And then the guidebook tables, and back to the table that I handed out earlier. And that's the last of the slides will be related to those birds. Again, the only difference in the two lists is golden eagles being available to master class falconers, but they cannot take golden eagles out of their nest. They have to catch them after they've left their nest. Harris's hawk is not native to Utah, but it's a very popular bird with falconers, and they can obtain those from captive stock, licensed falconers, or from other states. Arizona, for instance, allows our falconers to come down and capture wild Harris's hawks if they choose to do that. They have to get a permit and apply for that like they do here. Rough-legged hawk is also not native to Utah. They're only here in the winter. We allow capture in winter, but they have the same source for birds from licensed falconers or other states for those non-natives if they wish to practice falconry with those species. Frusinous hawks, the same. It is a native to Utah, but we only allow captive bred stock and birds obtained from other falconers, not to take them out of the wild. Gyrfalcon is a rare winter visitor to Utah, and they do occur and have been caught in Utah before, but so we allow the wild winter capture, But they're available from captive stock and from other falconers, and that's where most of the guys get their birds anyway. And then peregrine falcon, apprentice class falconers may not possess a non-imprint, non-hybrid peregrine, can only possess a non-imprint, non-hybrid. We do not allow an IS take of peregrines for the apprentice class. So, in summary, we're recommending the editorial corrections and clarifications that you already have in your packets. We're also recommending lowering the minimum age for practice for apprentice class to begin from 14 to 12. Recommending the revision on the terminology for the taxonomic orders. And then the clarifications on take and replacements and sale and barter of birds and procedures for their facilities inspection. And then last, the tables in the guidebook will be revised unless you make recommendations to those in accordance with the handouts that that I gave you before. And I believe that's all I have, so I'll be happy to have questions.
Thanks, Jim. Any questions from the RAC? Looks that way. Any discussion from the RAC? No public questions or comments.
There's no public to comment.
That's a young lady behind you on 6.
Make a motion to accept as presented by the division.
We have a motion from Kevin to accept the falconry 5-year rule and what do they call it? Rule and guidebook as presented by the division, seconded by Jeff Horrocks. All in favor? Any opposed? That's unanimous.
Thank you.
Moving the meeting. Before we adjourn, let's. What does everybody think of the venue of moving the RAC around to different areas of the region versus staying in Green River? Can we have some quick discussion?
I don't think it's a bad idea. People go to Green River on a regular basis and they travel quite a way. The way to do that, they're faithful to do that. I think we ought to accommodate them and go to their locations on a regular basis or rotate around on a regular schedule so that everybody that's on this board has the same disadvantage as they do advantage.
Okay. Anybody have
I had several comments from guys that usually, because of their jobs, they can't make that trip, and so they liked it because they was able to come due to some work schedules that some of these guys had. So.
All we're going to ask is that you turn the heat up a little
early. Well, there's no rain here.
Yeah, that's true. There ain't nothing here. Well, we got Maverick. We'll get you in the bottom.
Go down to Guy's house.
Can I make a suggestion that we have DWR look at what the agenda items are and where they feel the best location for that agenda item, like bears down suggestion. Here in Bear Country. Big game is going to be an issue because big game is important to everybody everywhere. But maybe for the next RAC meeting, if DWR could come with a proposed location for each RAC meeting for the next year, and then we can look at it and tweak it how we want and vote on it. Does that sound reasonable?
Whatever it works for. Who rocks works for me.
Okay.
You don't live in Emory County anymore. You don't care about where Horrocks things.
He does live in Emory County. You move.
This used to be where they held their deer hunter ball.
Yeah. Oh, right here.
This place is the deep one again.
15 more to 10. 15 more to 10. 15 more to 10. 15 more to 10.